If Kamala Harris has such great plans for how to address middle class problems, then she ought to do them now. Not when asking for a promotion, but in the job the American people gave her 3.5 years ago. And the fact that she isn't tells you a lot about how much you can trust her actual plans.
Let's get underway. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Oh, goodness sakes. Last night was important. Last night was a big one. Last night, a lot of people changed their mind about J.D. Vance. You know, we entered this debate last night with Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as underground or underwater with the American people in terms of his polling. He had the least favorable ratings for a vice presidential candidate in years. That is because he was a media. He began, you know, like a week or two in as being the nominee. He was a media caricature. And last night he wasn't a caricature. He was in command and delivered what I believe was the finest debate performance that I have seen from a candidate for president or vice president in my lifetime. And I've seen some pretty good debate performances. I think J.D. Vance absolutely hit it out of the park last night. He won this debate on style. He won this debate on substance. For heaven's sakes, J.D. Vance was more familiar with Minnesota's abortion statute than the governor of Minnesota was. J.D. Vance actually had to fact check one of the moderators who was trying to fact check him after saying that she wasn't going to fact check anybody. He didn't raise his voice. He didn't dissolve into name calling. Because he was so civil and so self-assured, he lowered the temperature and came through on substance. I'll tell you something. If conservatives talk the way that J.D. Vance talked, they would be winning every election for Senate and House and president this year. This is how you win. Before the debate last night, the pollster, Frank Luntz, who does not like Donald Trump, convened a 12-person focus group. The focus group before the debate was leaning 5 for Vance and 7 for Tim Walz. After the debate, he polled them again. So who do you think won the debate? Who are you more likely to support now? 12-2 for Vance. It was that dominant a performance. I would be saying that even if Tim Walz had also turned in a solid performance. He did not. He did not have a good night. He wasn't a disaster, but I'm guessing the Democrats are fuming about Tim Walz, because instead of affirming and reinforcing the stereotype that the Democrats have tried to project about J.D. Vance being weird, being extreme, being eccentric, he came through as someone who is completely unflappable, very self-assured, very confident, extremely well-informed and articulate, and here's the important part, empathetic with the average American. So, did Vance win the debate last night? Of course he did. Did Tim Walz lose the debate? No, Tim Walz didn't lose the debate last night. Kamala Harris lost the debate last night. Because J.D. Vance did an expert job of bringing back everything that isn't working well in the country today to Kamala Harris's policies as half of the Biden-Harris administration. He made it very clear that she is the incumbent. She is not the challenger. Made it very clear, if you don't like the economy right now, blame the people, including Kamala Harris, whose economic policies created the highest inflation since the 1970s. If you don't like all of the problems associated with the border, and I'm glad to see that J.D. Vance focused on the multitude of problems, including fentanyl, when he talked about what happens when you have a wide open border, blame the people who've been there for 3.5 years. It was just a superb performance. I'm happy to get your reactions, pro or con. If you agree with me or disagree with me, that's okay. I want to hear from you, the most intelligent listening audience in the North Americas. Lines are open at 206-421-5757 for your phone calls or for your text messages. Just let me know what you thought. Let me know what you thought was the most important moment of the debate. Again, that's 206-421-5757.
And the phones are ringing, John, before you grab all these comments here. I just like the fact at the beginning, I liked the greeting of both the candidates. Like, both are here, game on. And then at the end, they spent some time saying, okay, shake hands, you're doing what you're doing, I'm doing what I'm doing. The wives came out, met each other.
Yeah.
It was just nice to see, like, okay, we both know what we want to do. We've had our night together, now separate, and how many more weeks to go? We'll see how this rolls.
Yeah, well, 5 weeks to go. 5 weeks to go as of yesterday. And what a great point the radio legend just made. And that is, there wasn't yelling, there wasn't name-calling, there wasn't any hectoring. We had unfair debate moderators, but you're going to hear how J.D. Vance handled that in a moment. I love it. Basically, he fact-checked one of the moderators for trying to fact-check him. But, yeah, both men shook hands. Both men referred to each other. I believe it was Vance who started this, actually referred to Governor Walz as Tim. And a couple of times said, you know, you and I might even agree on this, but, and then he said, and one of my favorite moments was when, you know, Tim, you've really got a very tough assignment here tonight. You've got to play whack-a-mole. You've got, you know, every time you talk about the economy, you've Donald Trump's economic performance, which resulted in higher take-home pay for American workers and record low unemployment. You've got to try and whack that mole, and then up pops Donald Trump's great record on the border. You've got to try and whack that mole. At the same time, you've got to try and whack the mole that shows Kamala Harris's performance on the border. I mean, it was just superb. Anyway, we've got some great audio to run. If you didn't watch the debate, no problem. we watched the debate for you, okay? I watched it for you so you wouldn't have to. But I'll tell you something. If you are a Trump-Vance fan, you're going to want to go back and watch that debate last night. And you'll feel a whole lot better about things. Quentin calling from Grays Harbor County on the commute this morning. Go for it, Quentin.
John, good morning. What I took away from the debate last night when I watched it, John, J.D. Vance was exceptionally graceful. I thought he did a marvelous job of being assertive when it was necessary and being kind when it was also necessary. But he was graceful the entire time.
Yeah.
I thought that was one of the most substantive debates we've had in a long time. In fact, I like how he handled Governor Walz. He was very gracious to Walz, even though Walz was trying to pin him down with some verbal aikido or jiu-jitsu. You know, great. J.D. Vance just, he kind of artfully wiggled out of it and pivoted very deftly and stayed on point and kept reminding everyone that Kamala Harris is the current vice president. She's the incumbent. She's not running for any office. She's already in office.
Well, that's a great comment. The other thing about this is that J.D. Vance understood that Walz was not going to come out hot and was not going to come out as obnoxious as he was. Remember, it was Tim Walz who was the first guy to refer to J.D. Vance as weird. And they actually tried to get that label to stick to J.D. Vance, and they made up stuff. They literally made up stuff about him being a sexual deviant, which, again, was just made up out of nowhere. No incident, no anecdote, you know, no claim by anybody. They just made it up and then took a couple of his previous comments out of context to make him look like this bizarre extremist.
I don't think anyone who saw that.
And so he knew that Walz wasn't going to come out that way. So the only way that he could make Walz look like a radical would be to basically be a tough guy. And J.D. Vance said, no, I'm not going to be the tough guy. I'm not going to be the heavy in this debate. I'm simply going to rise head and shoulders above what we've seen up to now. And you're absolutely right, Quentin. He was graceful. He was gracious. He was civil. And he was utterly, completely in command. You know, as I said a couple of minutes ago, he knew more about Minnesota's abortion statute than Tim Walz himself knew, or at least was letting on that he knew. And he was absolutely unflappable. That it was a masterclass in how to conduct yourself in a debate. Anyway, good comment. Thank you very much. Also, the text line already heating up this morning. Bob in Renton said, Tim Walz last night admitted that he is a knucklehead. The dictionary defines a knucklehead as a stupid person. We'll play that clip coming up. That was the cringiest moment of the debate. Basically, as all of KVI listeners know, Tim Walz has a reputation for kind of making stuff up. To give life to an anecdote, you know, he will inflate his military experience. Remember he said he was at a ceremony when they were loading a flag-draped coffin of a U.S. servicemen killed in action. He said, I watched the ceremony at Bagram Air Force Base in Iraq. Two things. Bagram Air Force Base is in Afghanistan, not Iraq, and Tim Walz has never been in either place. But again, he just kind of made it up. And he said he was in Hong Kong during the Tiananmen Square massacre in 1989. And it turned out he wasn't. He was not in Hong Kong. He was in Nebraska. And when he was asked about that, he just basically melted down. And it was one of those moments where you actually feel uncomfortable watching someone in a situation like this. You'll hear it, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about if you didn't see it in the debate last night. More comments. Cindy in Buckley said, Donald Trump should take some lessons from his running mate on relating to all of us. You know what? I think every politician should take some lessons from J.D. Vance last night. This is how you get your message across. This is how you connect with the American people. This is how you show empathy. This is how you show that you're ready to govern. Mike in Anacortes, if only Trump was half as good at debating as Vance, great showing. Tim Walz was looking for an exit ramp most of the time. I will tell you this, Walz looked very uncomfortable during the debate. On the answer on illegal immigration, I love what Ben Shapiro said. He said, Vance gives a tremendous answer on illegal immigration. Tim Walz looks as though he's been detained by a police officer for shoplifting. Anyway, it's a good morning in America, Wednesday, October 2nd edition of the radio program of record. Hey, can't wait for Philip J. Vandervoort III's social media sweep right around the corner. Good morning.
Sunshine, lollipops, rainbows. Legendary Lyric Wednesday. You still working on an idea?
25 minutes after 6. You know, it's Wednesday. You're absolutely right, radio legend. That means we need our legendary lyric contest, which we will give you that lyric coming up right after the social media sweep this morning. Right now, Philip J. Vandervoort III is going to tell us, I think, what the reaction was to last night's debate.
I found a pretty good thread here, and it starts with Charles Payne, business news guy on Fox Business News, the social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. And Charles Payne from Fox Business News posted last night after the debate, if J.D. Vance were a stock, he'd be NVIDIA from April 2019.
Oh,
now,
ouch.
I'm not a day trader, John. I don't know what NVIDIA stock is going for, but this is a tech stock. NVIDIA makes these video cards that propel the graphics that you see on computers and PlayStations and Xboxes and stuff like that. And so NVIDIA stock has kind of been at the forefront of the boom in video game sales and driving video game systems and things like that. So a couple other people chimed in after Charles Payne added that. Here's one response. J.D. Vance came across as measured, likable, knowledgeable, intelligent, and understanding of the issues we face as Americans.
Yeah.
Outstanding job. Another person wrote, J.D. Vance got my vote in 4 years, too. And that was something that had crossed my mind a lot about the Trump VP pick. Is this somebody who can, if Trump manages to win here in 2024, is this someone who can be the leading contender in 2028 as well? So there's one person there.
Sure.
And then somebody else responded about the stock analogy. And Tim Walz's stock would be BlackBerry in October of 2024. BlackBerry used to make the smartphone that has disappeared from
which
the marketplace.
Which was kind of the hinge between between pagers and cell phones.
Yeah, one of those first smartphone versions. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple of those items. Now, here's something else. You know, we just heard that, or I read that person's tweet about how this could propel J.D. Vance potentially in 2028. And here's something else that could be a factor by the year 2028. And it revolves around the future of the Pac-2 sports conference between Oregon State and Washington State. And they've added a couple of schools that will play football. They're up to seven now with commitments, I think, for the season starting in the fall of 2026. But yesterday, Gonzaga is a basketball primary-only school. They don't have a tackle football team at the University of Gonzaga in Spokane. And Gonzaga agreed yesterday to join the Pac-12 conference, even though it's only basically two teams now, will be seven teams in the future. So
for basketball?
Gonzaga will join, exactly. The Pac-2-12 conference would need to add at least one more football team to get to that eight threshold where they can continue as a conference. But here's some important history. Somebody posted on social media, the reason Gonzaga ended its football program after the 1941 season was due to World War II. They lost funding and players. It's time to make things right and bring back Gonzaga football now that it's the newest member of the Pac-12 conference. So, looking into the crystal ball a little bit, that could be a possibility that eventually Gonzaga makes that move and decides to add football if they join the Pac-12 conference for basketball and all their other sports that are non-tackle football.
So, well, that would be a nice thing to see.
You heard it here first.
But they're going to need to switch out the uniforms they were using back in the 40s.
I don't know what that uniform was.
Yeah, I don't think those football uniforms are up to standards.
Sure, by the end of the week, they'll have about 14 different versions.
Those leather helmets, not be
still suitable.
Standard issue for today's NCAA.
And they got what? Joe Albee Stadium still good for Spokane?
True, that would be a factor as well. They'd have to build a facility where they could play 30,000 fans or more. Yeah.
It's 6:30. Got our legendary lyric right around the corner of the John Carlson Show and plenty of great highlight. Good morning. It's the John Carlson Show. Talk radio 570 KVI, 24 minutes to 7 o'clock this morning. And this being Wednesday, you know what that means. Time for our legendary lyric contest where I give you the lyric to a classic hit song, sometimes a historic hit song. And when you hear us play that lyric going in or coming back from commercial break, you just be the 10th caller. And there's going to be some prizes coming your way if you can name the artist or the song.
Yeah, good win, too, with your exploration and trying to figure this one out. Daniel's Broiler, always a favorite, and since the beginning of Legendary Lyric, insisted we've got to be a part of this. Since 1980, USDA Prime Steak, John and Phil and everybody. Specialties, they've got the chicken, the fresh seafood. Here's what I like. Online reservations. They offer the dine-in, the takeout, delivery. Four locations close to theater, activities of the Seattle area on the east side, Bellevue, downtown Seattle, Leschi, and South Lake Union. And now that we're into fall, how about a good read for your collection? The new book, Follow the Science, from award-winning investigative news reporter, host of ABC's TV's Full Measure, and a good friend of KVI, and John Carlson, Cheryl Atkinson.
Yes.
Follow the Science, how big pharma misleads, obscures, and prevails. Find it online, your favorite bookstore, or win it today.
She's had three bestsellers in a row. This one might be her best. Follow the Science. Okay, so those are your two prizes. Here is your lyric. I'm so afraid of dying. Before I dry the tears, she's crying. Before I watch your seabirds flying in the sun. I'm so afraid of dying. Before I dry the tears, she's crying. Before I watch your seabirds flying in the sun. Do you recognize that lyric? Maybe not. Maybe it's a little elusive. But I'll tell you what, I guarantee when you hear it, you'll go, oh, yeah, of course. How could I not know that? Anyway, there is your lyric. One more time. I'm so afraid of dying. Before I dry the tears, she's crying. Before I watch your seabirds flying in the sun. When you hear it, call me. 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. All right. A whole lot more coming your way on last night's debate. It was a very good night for J.D. Vance. It was a very good night for the Trump-Vance ticket. There had been ongoing concerns. Is J.D. Vance too young? He's just 40 years old. Is J.D. Vance too inexperienced? Is J.D. Vance ready for prime time? Is he too extreme? All of these things had taken a toll on him, but J.D. Vance responded not by retreating and refusing to do interviews and press conferences. He doubled down, he tripled down, and went out and has been one of the most accessible to the press, accessible candidates for public office. For that matter, so is President Trump. When you're hiding from the press, that's generally not a good sign. And one of the problems, and David Axelrod, who was Barack Obama's campaign manager, both when he was running for the U.S. Senate and when he was running for president, David Axelrod last night was just throwing his hands up in frustration. Why has Kamala Harris, why has Tim Walz, why have they both been so reluctant to get on television? Because Tim Walz has only done a couple of interviews and no press conferences. You know, sometimes someone will shout a question to him when he's, you know, walking from place to place, you know, at a county fair or whatever, and he'll shout back an answer. But for the most part, they've kept them both on ice. This is not a good sign that you have confidence in your own candidates when the campaign leadership tells them to batten down the hatches and stay home. Here's the bad news for the Harris-Waltz ticket. It means that when he does show himself, it has compounded influence. It magnifies the impact because people don't put it in context with all the other things he's been saying. And so Tim Walz last night did not have a good night. And afterwards, here's a quick montage of the cable news pundits about who won the debate last night. Again, you know that the people you're about to hear from are no fans of Donald Trump or of J.D. Vance. We're going to start with Geraldo Rivera. Then you're going to hear Chris Cuomo from News Nation, formerly with CNN. And then you're going to hear CNN anchors John King before we go to MSNBC's Nicole Wallace absolutely incoherently melting down. The MSNBC people were funny to watch last night. They were just beside themselves. Anyway, let's play that montage for you now. Here's Geraldo Rivera, then Chris Cuomo.
There is no doubt in my mind, however Governor Walz did in terms of sincerity, that Vance won this debate.
Does Governor Walz have a problem with the truth? No.
They were talking. At one point, Vance wanted to correct something about how Haitians got into this country. And he was right, and the moderators wouldn't let him correct it. It's very interesting.
But at the beginning...
Now we go to CNN's John King.
The two issues driving the campaign right now are Harris has a big deficit on the economy, Harris has a big deficit on immigration, and Republicans were happy tonight, and Democrats a little bit nervous that on those two issues, Vance carried it.
And he kept going back over and over and over again. If you don't like the economy, Kamala Harris owns this issue. That's her administration. If you don't like the way things have worked out on the southern border, that's her issue, too. In fact, even more so as the borders are. Joe Biden's appointed borders are. And the fiction that, oh, she was just supposed to do root causes in Central and South America for why people come here. The reason people come here, the root cause, was opening the gate in the first place. That's your root cause. But he kept over and over and over again bringing it back to Kamala Harris. That's why she, not Walz, she was the loser in last night's debate. Now here's Jake Tapper.
J.D. Vance is much more experienced at this, at public speaking, at defending himself, at pivoting.
Now, I want you to hear this because this is just wonderful. MSNBC, they've taken any pretense that they're journalists, okay? Never mind any of that. They are just completely in the tank for the Democrats. They didn't know how to react. They knew that Tim Walz turned in a mediocre performance. They knew that J.D. Vance turned in a stellar performance. They knew that he was landing punch after punch, not just on Walz, but on Kamala Harris. And this is Nicole Wallace, a one-time Republican. So this makes it even more delicious. Now an anti-Trump Democrat. Here is how she reacted to last night's debate.
The audacity. I agree with you that we're in year nine and no one knows how to cover the audacity. Mm-hmm. The audacity is it someone should have said, stop it. Stop. Are you effing kidding me? And they should have dropped that F-bomb, right? I mean, they should have just, this is a debate. This may be the only chance people have to see the difference.
Key word there was audacity. When a commentator says that the moderators should have started using the F word, that pretty much gives you an idea of how you think their side did last night in the debate. Ouch!
It shows you the desperate straits that the on-air staff at MSNBC are in, right?
Anyway, we're going to play plenty of audio coming up top here, the 7 o'clock hour. We're going to check in with my buddy Lars Larson in a moment, too, our noon to three host. But before we do, one more time, here's your legendary lyric. We'll be playing it sometime within the next 90 minutes. I'm so afraid of dying before I dry the tears she's crying, before I watch your seabirds flying in the sun. There's your lyric, ladies and gentlemen. All right. It is, has barred the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres from setting foot in the country.
Good.
Because of the deep-seated anti-Israel bias that he has displayed after Iran attacked the Israeli people yesterday.
Yep, and it's the right move. And then you've got the White House saying, "Well, we're going to take strong action if against Iran." And of course, the White House, toothless old tiger that he is, won't say what he's going to do. And I think, can I suggest that the New York Times, supposedly one of the most revered news organizations in the country, I don't revere them, but the Democrats love them. Can I give you a couple of quotes and
they are the liberal newspaper of record. They used to be the paper of record.
Not
but
anymore.
Now they're just the liberal paper of record. They've moved that far to the left. Go ahead.
I want to read two quotes and you tell me who they're describing. Okay. A charismatic unifying figure for the group's members and followers and a propensity to crack jokes.
Tim
now
Walz?
They could be talking about John Carlson.
Tim Walz? No?
How about the late Mr. Hassan Nasrallah?
Yeah, no, I can't believe that is how they are remembering one of the most vicious terrorists who has American blood on his hands, by the way. He killed Americans.
Yep. All those Marines in the barracks in Beirut, he was around when Hezbollah pulled that off.
And when bases and places that American soldiers frequented were blown up. Same thing there. Yeah, no, that's the New York Times. Hey, listen,
Don't worry. Kamala Harris says there are no American service members in harm's way at this point.
Yeah, boy, someone forgot to fact check her. Maybe Margaret Brennan can do it right this time if she has a chance to chat with Kamala. Real quickly, we have 10 seconds. What'd you think of last night's debate, sir?
I have to confess, I have never become friends with school shooters, but Tim Walz says he has. That ought to be a kiss of death.
I think that was a misspeak on his part.
A big one.
I think J.D. Vance turned in one of the best debate performances I've ever seen from a national political candidate, Lars. J.D. Vance was just superb, I thought.
He was.
All right. We have so much more right around the corner with the Commute with Carlson Talk Radio 570 KVI, including excerpts from that debate. If you didn't watch the debate, you're going to love hearing these excerpts coming up.
Tim just said something that I agree with. We don't want to blame immigrants for higher housing prices, but we do want to blame Kamala Harris for letting in millions of illegal aliens into this country, which does drive up cost, Tim. 25 million illegal aliens competing with Americans for scarce homes is one of the most significant drivers of home prices in the country.
Oh, it was a good night. The great night. Welcome to hour number two, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It is 4 minutes after 7 o'clock in the morning, Tuesday, October 2nd edition of the radio program of record. Yes, we got our legendary lyric contest going. Isn't that right, radio legend Mark Christopher?
By golly, we do have a Wednesday, don't we?
We have here. I'll give you your lyric and then Mark will tell you some of the prizes that are available to today's winner. Your lyric is as follows. I am so afraid of dying. Before I dry the tears she's crying, before I watch your seabirds flying in the sun. So I must tell you, ladies and gentlemen, kind of proud of myself. I stumped not only Philip J. Vandervoort III, but the radio legend himself.
Yeah, I've got no connection or clues going on right now.
Yeah, I got the words wrong. It's one of those songs I used to sing all the time, but I sang the wrong words compared to the real lyrics that you have revealed. So I'll never forget them once we get a winner.
But it was a hit song that really caught the nation. Caught the nation's attention, was a huge hit, and I think it was from 1970, 71. And when you hear that lyric going, it was 69.
I was
going
to say, yeah.
1969.
Yeah. Probably the first time we heard it was on TV. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. And so... When you hear that lyric coming back or going into commercial break, just be caller number 10, 206-421-5757, and you win the following.
Yeah, Daniel's Broiler, of course, what a hit that is. Four locations. Think about them for a holiday party. They've got the party rooms here, different for every location. Bellevue, downtown Seattle, Leschi, South Lake Union. The key about their locations, everybody, they're close to theater, shopping, just icons of the Northwest since 1980. Have a look at danielsbroiler.com. Let's add to your read collection here for the fall and the coming darker nights we're about to get. The new book, Follow the Science, award-winning investigative news reporter, host of ABC TV's Full Measure, our good friend here at KVI, Cheryl Atkinson. Follow the Science, How Big Pharma Misleads, Obscures, and Prevails. And, John, you've already rated the book here.
So, yeah. Oh, 5 stars. It's superb.
And this is like how many for her, Cheryl's written?
This would be her fourth.
Fourth book.
One more time on your lyric. I am so afraid of dying. Before I dry the tears, she's crying. Before I watch your seabirds flying in the sun. Be caller number 10, 206-421-5757. To the debate last night. J.D. Vance goes into this debate needing to make a great impression. And he was smart enough in his very first answer to say, you know, I think that for most of you, this is the first time you've had a chance to hear from me. Because there's a layer of Americans, and many KVI listeners and I would be in that layer, who are following politics much of the time. But for much of the country, they tune that stuff out. They don't pay much attention to it. They don't see the relevance. And then, sometime after Labor Day, they start paying a little bit of attention. And then you get into October. And that's when people pay much closer attention. And last night was their chance to really hear from J.D. Vance, and he capitalized on that. And he put forth a performance last night that I think is one of the best debate performances I've seen from a candidate for president or vice president in my lifetime. I mean, put Walz to the side for a moment, Tim Walz to the side. Just Vance himself just did a stellar job. And one of the moments I really liked is, you know, J.D. Vance, he was technically debating Walz, but his assignment was to tie people's frustrations about the economy and the border, the two things they care about most right now, to his running mate, Kamala Harris. And here is how he did that.
If you notice, what Governor Walz just did is he said, first of all, Donald Trump has to listen to the experts. And then when he acknowledged that the experts screwed up, he said, well, Donald Trump didn't do nearly as good of a job as the statistics show that he did. So what Tim Walz is doing, and I honestly, Tim, I think you got a tough job here, because you've got to play whack-a-mole. You've got to pretend that Donald Trump didn't deliver rising take-home pay, which of course he did. You've got to pretend that Donald Trump didn't deliver lower inflation, which of course he did. And then you simultaneously got to defend Kamala Harris's atrocious economic record, which has made gas, groceries, and housing unaffordable for American citizens. I was raised by a woman who would sometimes go into medical debt so that she could put food on the table in our household. I know what it's like to not be able to afford the things that you need to afford. We can do so much better. To all of you watching, we can get back to an America that's affordable again. We just got to get back to common sense economic principles.
Boom. Forget the experts. Let's embrace common sense. It was just one of several J.D. Vance moments, which were just replete with crisp, clear delivery, anecdotes, including several about himself, because he struggled. He grew up in a terrible, what we would call a dysfunctional household. Raised largely by his grandma, he calls his mama, because his own mother was hopelessly addicted to drugs. And so he knows what that is like. And instead of getting out of that situation and then running away, he has embraced a platform of issues and ideas that address people who were in the same situation he was in. And he knows one of the things you don't do is you don't embrace the politics of entitlements and welfare, because that just keeps you down. And again, he just did wonderful on that. Now, it wasn't just J.D. Vance versus Tim Walz. It was often J.D. Vance versus the moderators. That we had the same problem we had last time with Trump going against Kamala, where you had the ABC moderators openly taking their position and openly, quote, fact-checking Donald Trump, but not fact-checking Kamala Harris, despite numerous opportunities for them to do so. And you're going to hear that in just a moment. Want to start with the lead-in here. J.D. Vance talking about Springfield, Ohio, and the impact of refugee and asylum-seeking immigrants in that town.
In Springfield, Ohio, and in communities all across this country, you've got schools that are overwhelmed. You've got hospitals that are overwhelmed. You've got housing that is totally unaffordable because we brought in millions of illegal immigrants to compete with Americans for scarce homes. The people that I'm most worried about in Springfield, Ohio, are the American citizens who have had their lives destroyed by Kamala Harris's open border. It is a disgrace, Tim. And I actually think, I agree with you. I think you want to solve this problem, but I don't think that Kamala Harris does.
Senator, your time is up. Governor, you have 1 minute to respond.
Yeah, well, it is law enforcement that asked for the bill. They helped craft it. They're the ones that supported it. That's because they know we need to do this. Look, this issue of...
Referring to the bill, the immigration bill, the terrible immigration bill that Donald Trump opposed, and therefore it didn't pass.
Of continuing to bring this up, of not dealing with it, of blaming migrants for everything. On housing, we could talk a little bit about Wall Street speculators buying up housing and making them less affordable, but it becomes a blame. Look, this bill also gives the money necessary to adjudicate. I agree. It should not take 7 years for an asylum claim to be done. This bill gets it done in 90 days. Then you start to make a difference in this, and you start to adhere to what we know, American principles. Look, I don't talk about my faith a lot, but Matthew 25:40 talks about, to the least amongst us you do unto me. I think that's true of most Americans. They simply want order to it. This bill does it. It's funded. It's supported by the people who do it. And it lets us keep our dignity about how we treat other people.
Now, it was after that exchange that Margaret Brennan showed the anti-Trump bias she has and anti-Vance bias, and Vance pushed back.
Thank you, Governor. And just to clarify for our viewers, Springfield, Ohio does have a large number of Haitian migrants who have legal status. Right. Temporary protected status.
Well, Margaret, but
thank you, Senator. We have so much to get to.
Margaret, I think it's important because
we're going to turn out of the economy. Thank you,
Margaret. The rules were that you guys weren't going to fact check, and since you're fact checking me, I think it's important to say what's actually going on. So there's an application called the CBP One app, where you can go on as an illegal migrant, apply for asylum or apply for parole, and be granted legal status at the wave of a Kamala Harris open border wand. That is not a person coming in, applying for a green card and waiting for 10 years. That
Thank
is
you,
the facilitation
Senator.
Of illegal immigration, Margaret, by
Thank
our
you,
own
Senator,
leadership.
Thank you, Senator, for describing the legal process.
Laws,
we have
Kamala
so
Harris
much to get to, Senator.
Pathway.
Those laws have
so
been
much...
on the books since 1990.
Thank you, gentlemen.
The
we want to have...
The app has not been on the books
since 1990. It's something that Kamala Harris created, Margaret.
Gentlemen, the audience can't hear you because your mics are cut. We have so much we want to get to. Thank you for explaining the legal process. Nora.
Thank you, Margaret.
Okay, well, first of all, good for him for refusing to back down because she was wrong. And she realized when he was answering the question that she was wrong. So, gentlemen, Cobb, thank you for explaining the legal process. He wasn't explaining the legal process. He was explaining why she was wrong to say that all these Haitian migrants are there legally. They enter the country illegally and apply for a what's called parole or short-term relief. And explaining that, she realized quickly that she was on a very slippery surface. And so thank you for explaining the legal process. We've got to move on. And by the way, she began that debate yesterday. She began the debate saying that we weren't going to fact check that we're not going to fact check the candidates. The candidates will fact check each other. And what did she do? She stepped right in and tried to color the impression of how people would see that back and forth between Vance and Walz by saying, and those immigrants are there legally. So good for JD. And once again, this is how you deal with a biased, unfair media. You immediately hold them accountable for it. And by the way, you'll notice no name calling. He didn't raise his voice. He simply didn't stop talking when the fact checker turned out to be wrong. So first of all, she wasn't supposed to fact check in the first place. Second of all, she had it wrong. And he had it right. Even Chris Cuomo, no fan of Donald Trump, even Chris Cuomo said, yeah, she was wrong and he was right. Here this Wednesday morning, second day of October, the commute with Carlson, Philip J. Vandenberg the Third, standing by with the social media sweep. You got a good one here. I know what's coming.
I previewed this one with you. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. It's political campaign election season. And that's when morning radio shows all across the country, particularly syndicated ones that I'll get into here in just a moment, end up bringing on people to talk politics, to talk about presidential campaigns. And probably one of the biggest morning shows in radio and syndicated radio right now is a New York City show called The Breakfast Club.
Very big and back east.
Exactly. Particularly big back east. It's based in New York City. It's hosted by a guy named Charlemagne the God. But they had Byron Donalds on. He's the Florida Republican congressman. And they got into
Black Republican from Florida.
Yep. And they got into the whole Trump, Kamala Harris economic plan. What do you get if you vote for Trump versus Harris with the economy, things like that. And it may have been a guest. I don't know that it's a sidekick, but there's another woman that was on.
It was Angela Rye.
Rye.
The radical commentator.
Okay. And Byron Donald starts explaining why Kamala Harris is responsible for the Biden economy right now, right. Bidenomics and all that, the inflation and all of that. And this all revolved around Kamala Harris using a tie-breaking vote as a president of the Senate to get the, what was it called?
Not Inflation Reduction Act.
It was the American Recovery Plan or something like that. The 2021 bill that she used the deciding vote to break tie and get it passed on to President Biden's desk, who he signed it. So here's a little bit of this first exchange. And you're going to hear this gal, Angela, who's just going to ignore the factual information about the tie-breaking vote.
Just to reiterate about her, she was the commentator who, it was either on CNN or MSNBC, it was hard to tell the difference, who called for taking down statues, not just of Confederate war generals during, I think this was 2021, but also of Jefferson and Washington because they owned slaves.
Okay. So here's the disagreement that they have over the factual aspects of what Kamala Harris voted on in the Senate.
Are we thriving? Are members in your state?
We're not really thriving right now. This inflation, which, by the way, was brought to us by Kamala Harris, has really slowed down people from being able to excel.
By Kamala?
Yes.
Vice president.
Oh, Charlemagne.
It's still the president.
Charlemagne, listen, man. When Joe Biden wanted to do his American Rescue Plan, Kamala Harris was the tie-breaking vote in the United States Senate. She broke the tie that started this inflation that has hurt so many people in our country. Everybody listening to your show. It's not true?
First of all, it's a tie-breaking vote. You sure you want to go there?
Okay, let's go there.
So she's trying to change the subject now because she's pinned down. And then here's how the whole thing concludes. And you're going to hear the Florida congressman, the Republican Byron Donalds. He's going to ask another guy on the panel who does real estate related stuff.
Yeah, but before
a very
we get
important
there,
economic question.
He had the vote and he pulled it out of pocket.
Yeah, he pulled out the sheet of paper.
And he said, should I read it? And he said, fine, I'll give it to Charlemagne.
And he hands it to the host.
So he basically, as the new term, he brought the receipts.
Yes, bingo. Yeah. And so she's trying now to run for cover. Because she's clearly exposed and she's going to lose this argument. But she's just basically going to sit here and be in denial that all the things that Byron Donalds is saying are accurate. So here's how it ends.
Because I was in the budget committee when they brought the bill. And I said in that committee, it's going to cause massive inflation. That's what happened. So the problem we have in our economy today is that prices have gone up massively. Wages adjusted for inflation is down. People's pocketbooks are hurting. But we have a presidential election in 40 days. So, and I'm going to ask Envy this question. Envy, you're in the housing business as well. I know, because I watch,
I listen to the show.
No, I'm just asking them a question. Chill, Angela. So I listen to the show. I know you do a lot of business in housing. Mm-hmm. Would you hire somebody that broke up stuff in one of your houses to fix the other houses?
No.
Exactly. She broke the economy.
I'm not going to do this this morning, Byron. Why are you not going to do this, Angela? Because I'm bringing facts, and you don't want to do it no more?
Come on now, Angela. That's not right. I thought we were going to have a fact-based conversation. I want to have a fact-based conversation.
I'm not going to do this this morning, she says. Completely exposed. She's getting worked by Byron Donalds on this.
I'm so glad.
And she wants to avoid the conversation and move on to something else.
I'm so glad that he humiliated her on that show in particular.
Now, I put this onto the KVI webpage, so if you want to go to kvi.com and you look on our
It's fun
page,
to watch.
You see it says, Kamala Harris broke the economy, says Congressman, and you can see the embedded video there because this all stems from video from this morning show back in New York City.
Beautiful.
But, what a perfect point-counterpoint from Byron Donalds there. Just absolutely dominated the conversation. I have a follow-up from something you hit on last week, John. The Bothell High School cheerleading team is going to be allowed to go to this Nationals out-of-state competition. So Cairo 7 reported on this story. That's how you got going on it. You spoke to one of the moms of the Bothell High School cheerleading team last week who was vexed about how the school district kind of arbitrarily said, no, for an extracurricular club,
they wouldn't let
them
go to Nationals.
You're not going to be able to go out-of-state competition 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
You can only go every other year.
And that's just strange. They don't say that to the debate team. They don't say that to the jazz clubs.
Yeah, like a class-related competition for choir or jazz or orchestra.
When there's a national competition, they get to go. Franklin High always sends their band back for the jazz, the Duke Ellington festival competition.
So the Bothell High School administration must have felt the heat on this one. They decided to relax and allow the cheerleading team to go to this national competition that's out of state.
They're performers. They're dancers. They're entertainment. They support school spirit. Why wouldn't they be considered like the football team?
And again, they're so good, they qualify every year for Nationals. They say, no, we're not going to let you go. And they said, "What? We'll raise the money. It won't cost you a dime." No, every other year.
Not something that the school is on the hook for money-wise. The team is paying for it themselves.
All right, 24 minutes to 8 o'clock in the morning on the John Carlson Show. We've got a winner. Our legendary lyrics contest this week, that would be KVI listener John in Kirkland, not too far away from the Daniels Broiler location in Bellevue, Place. Congratulations, John. You win that. You win a copy of Cheryl Atkinson's wonderful book, just released, Follow the Science. So great on you. The song is Galveston.
Interesting pick you have here, John. I can't wait to hear a story.
This is a song about a soldier that's waiting to go into battle, thinking about the girl he left behind, who he still loves, and his hometown of Galveston. Now, here's the interesting part about this song. It was a huge country music hit, went to number one. And in fact, 20 years ago, it ranked number 8 in CMT's 100 Greatest Songs in Country Music.
Wow.
Again, went to number 4 on the Billboard Hot 100. And I think sold 6 million copies within a year. It was released in the fall of 1969. So basically, it is 55 years old, this song.
And you never get tired of hearing it. Yeah.
What's interesting is that an earlier version of the song had different lyrics, and it was a protest song. And for instance, the second verse of the song was, Galveston, oh Galveston, wonder if she could forget me. I'd go home if they would let me put down this gun and go to Galveston. But Glenn Campbell said, uh-uh, that's not what I'm going to sing. Here are the lyrics that he sang. Galveston, oh Galveston, I still hear your sea waves crashing. While I watch the cannons flashing, I clean my gun and dream of Galveston.
How do you write lyrics like that?
Well, Jimmy Webb wrote it, and Jimmy Webb changed the song. And, you know, that became the new version of the song Galveston. So it's there's an interesting history to that hit song.
Okay, and one thing you like about the legendary Mark Christopher, you know the famous bass line. Glenn Campbell and Carole Kaye worked as part of the Wrecking Crew. Perhaps you've seen the documentary. These were the musicians, the nobodies, the no names, because Beach Boys, Sonny and Cher, Glenn Campbell, and so many more. Leslie
Frank
Gore.
Sinatra.
Frank Sinatra. They had no time to go in the studio with bands and have their own group record, so the singers would go in. The Wrecking Crew with musicians like Glenn Campbell, guitar, and Carole Kaye, who played bass guitar, would do all the music. Carole Kaye did over 10,000 songs that she recorded the bass line of major hits of the 60s, the
like
70s, and the 80s. Carole Kaye, few people knew this, born in Everett, Washington.
How about that?
Studied guitar, bass guitar, and became a teacher. Also got her honors for all her music, went to work for the Wrecking Crew there at Capitol Records, made a fortune, and the rest is history.
How about that? By the way, one more little interesting factoid. The Wrecking Crew performed the music on this recording.
There you go.
So... Glenn Campbell went from being a member of the Wrecking Crew, music studio musicians, to actually singing lead. And, of course, he was a great guitar player in his own right.
Yeah. And the Beach Boys having problems with Brian Wilson. They were familiar with the Wrecking Crew.
They
said, who's that guy that has the hair that looks like one of us, that Glenn guy? Maybe he can come join the group for about a year. So Glenn Campbell, that's how he became a Beach Boy.
And they offered him full-time gig, and he said, don't want to be a Beach Boy. I wanted to hang out my own shingle. And I guess that worked out pretty well for him.
Okay. Even the TV show.
Okay, back to the future here. A fascinating take on how American politics is changing. This is CNN's chief polling guy. His name is Harry Enten. And a CNN anchor, Sarah Sidner, are talking about how politics and how people feel about politics is changing in America in a way that is benefiting Donald Trump. Here, have a listen.
You know, sometimes there are data points that just jump off the screen, should set off sirens. All right, this is union households, this is Democratic margin in presidential election. It ain't what it used to be. You know, you go back to 1992, Bill Clinton won that union vote by 30 points. Hillary Clinton only won it by 12 points back in 2016. That was the lowest mark for a Democrat since 1984, Mondale versus Reagan. But look at where Kamala Harris is today. She's only leading by 9 points. That would be the worst Democratic performance in a generation, 10 points off the mark of Joe Biden, who, of course, won 4 years ago, who is sort of that union guy, Union Joe, right? Won it by 19 points. She's 10 points off his mark, and the worst in a generation, if this, in fact, holds, Sarah.
It is interesting to note that the difference between this and this, and Biden still won.
Still won.
But those numbers are significantly down. All right, talk to me about manual labor, those folks who went to trade schools.
Yeah, those folks who use their hands. I think a lot of people oftentimes conflate the union vote with those who use their hands. Mike Rowe, of course, has been arguing more people should go to trade schools, more people should get a vocational degree. Look at this margin. This, wow, to me, oh boy, does this tell you about the state of our politics now versus back in the early 1990s. Margin among vocational and trade school grads in pre-election polling. Bill Clinton was leading that vote over George H.W. Bush by 7 points. Look at where Donald Trump is today over Kamala Harris, a 31 point advantage. When I think people think of the working class, they think of people who use their hands. And we know that Donald Trump has been going after that vote. And he is in a very, very strong position, more so perhaps than any other bloc. The folks who go to trade school, vocational school, that has moved from being a core Democratic group to now being a core group of Donald Trump's massive amount of support among the working class.
Can you believe that? When Bill Clinton ran for president, people who went to trade school, went to, you know, vocational education, technical school, he won that vote by 7 points. Today, the men and women who are educated at trade schools, voc ed centers, technical schools, are supporting Trump by 31 percentage points. This is one of the highest thresholds of support. This does not mean they're leaning Republican. It means they're deep red Republican. And we've been talking in recent weeks. I've been letting you know that Democrats still have most of the black vote, but a historic number of African-American voters are now gravitating toward Trump. And Hispanic voters, who used to be for Democrats by comfortable double digits, you know, 18, 20 points, are now supporting Democrats by like 11 or 12 points. Just a huge sea change in where America is going. The Democrats are going to rue the day that they opened the border. They thought they were being clever. They thought that by opening the southern border, it was going to help them with Hispanic votes because the people coming over the border, well, they look like you look. They look like you. You know, they're brown skin too. Except most Hispanics don't think in terms of race. They don't want to be Latinx. They want to be American. And they don't like illegal immigration because most Hispanics in America are legal U.S. citizens. They were born here or they immigrated here legally. Why am I supposed to be in sympathy with someone who cuts the line just because he happens to have the same racial or ethnic background I might have? So the Democrats really blew it. The border issue among Hispanics cuts in Trump's direction. Most Hispanics are not pleased with what has happened at our southern border. And by the way, now it's not just the southern border, it's the northern border too. Okay, it is, the borders are porous because of two words, lax enforcement, which you can blame entirely, not on the border patrol, not on the agents. They're the most frustrated people of all. On the people who are giving them their orders. That's who you can blame. Just like you can't blame the Seattle police officers for high crime in Seattle. They're not being allowed to do their jobs. And when they do their jobs, the people they arrest are either no bail, or the charges are dismissed, or the charges are pleaded down, particularly if they're juveniles, which shields them from the consequences of their actions, which is why we have an explosion in juvenile crime. So that we are seeing some real changes among people who see life a lot closer. They see the issues more closely because they see them at ground level. And those are the voters who are drifting toward Trump. Trump is losing support from wealthier suburbs, but the people who most need a sympathetic ear in Washington, D.C., who are often ignored or even disparaged by the D.C. class, are the voters who are drifting in Trump's direction. To set the record straight about his claim of being in China during Tiananmen Square back in 1989, here's how he handled that relatively easy question.
Governor Walz, you said you were in Hong Kong during the deadly Tiananmen Square protests in the spring of 1989. But Minnesota Public Radio and other media outlets are reporting that you actually didn't travel to Asia until August of that year. Can you explain that discrepancy?
Yeah, well, and to the folks out there who didn't get at the top of this, look, I grew up in small rural Nebraska, town of 400, town that you rode your bike with your buddies till the streetlights come on, and I'm proud of that service. I joined the National Guard at 17, worked on family farms, and then I used the GI Bill to become a teacher, passionate about it, a young teacher. My first year out, I got the opportunity in the summer of 89 to travel to China. 35 years ago, be able to do that. I came back home and then started a program to take young people there. We would take basketball teams, we would take baseball teams, we would take dancers, and we would go back and forth to China. The issue for that was to try and learn. Now look, my community knows who I am. They saw where I was at. Look, I will be the first to tell you, I have poured my heart into my community. I've tried to do the best I can, but I've not been perfect.
Okay, so answer the question, sir.
Governor, just to follow up on that, the question was, can you explain the discrepancy?
Just, all I said on this was, is I got there that summer and misspoke on this. So I will just, that's what I've said. So I was in Hong Kong and China during the democracy protests went in. And from that, I learned a lot of what needed to be in governance.
Oh, boy. Did not go well for Mr. Walz. But even if things had not gone that bad, he still wouldn't have won because J.D. Vance was just superb last night. One of the best debate performances I've ever seen from a public figure. More about that and also about this strike back east, what these union heads are saying as the commute with Carlson continues.
Look, I think what Tim said just doesn't pass the smell test. For 3 years, Kamala Harris went out bragging that she was going to undo Donald Trump's border policy. She did exactly that. We had a record number of illegal crossings. We had a record number of fentanyl coming into our country. And now that she's running for president, or a few months before, she says that somehow she got religion and cared a lot about a piece of legislation.
Oh, boy. That was last night's debate. J.D. Vance was the clear winner. I think he dispelled any doubts about his ability to stand up on the stage and make the case for being Vice President of the United States. Here he's 20 years younger than Tim Walz, the Democratic nominee for Vice President, and he just absolutely outperformed Governor Walz, who often looked uncomfortable, ill at ease, a few deer in the headlights moments. But again, Vance did not win because Walz fell apart. Walz came across, frankly, as likable. He was just a cut or two cuts below J.D. Vance, who was crisp, clear, articulate, empathetic, civil, good-humored, and absolutely self-assured. If you want to see a masterclass in how to conduct yourself during a debate, that was it. And what is especially good, you know, this attempt by the left to demonize him, to call him weird, to make up stuff about him, including that he was a sexual deviant, was, again, something that was just plain made up and repeated before it went away, that he's an extremist. All of that was just dashed to the curb by his performance last night. So he did himself and his running mate quite a bit of good as a result of last night's debate. I am guessing a lot of voters, particularly young voters, are really taken with J.D. Vance. Listen, for example, to how he handled the question about the Trump economic plan.
The Wharton School has done an analysis of the Trump plan and says it would increase the nation's deficit by $5.8 trillion. My question is the same for you. How do you pay for all that without ballooning the deficit? I'll give you 2 minutes.
Well, first of all, you're going to hear a lot from Tim Walz this evening, and you just heard it in the answer. A lot of what Kamala Harris proposes to do, and some of it, I'll be honest with you, it even sounds pretty good. Here's what you won't hear, is that Kamala Harris has already done it. Because she's been the vice president for 3.5 years. She had the opportunity to enact all of these great policies. And what she's actually done instead is drive the cost of food higher by 25%, drive the cost of housing higher by about 60%, open the American southern border and make middle class life unaffordable for a large number of Americans. If Kamala Harris has such great plans for how to address middle class problems, then she ought to do them now, not when asking for a promotion, but in the job the American people gave her 3.5 years ago. And the fact that she isn't tells you a lot about how much you can trust her actual plans. Now, Donald Trump's economic plan is not just a plan, but it's also a record. A lot of those same economists attack Donald Trump's plans, and they have PhDs, but they don't have common sense and they don't have wisdom, because Donald Trump's economic policies delivered the highest take-home pay in a generation in this country, 1.5% inflation, and to boot, peace and security all over the world. So when people say that Donald Trump's economic plan doesn't make sense, I say, look at the record. He delivered rising take-home pay for American workers. Now, Tim admirably admits that they want to undo the Trump tax cuts. But if you look at what was so different about Donald Trump's tax cuts, even from previous Republican tax cut plans, is that a lot of those resources went to giving more take-home pay to middle-class and working-class Americans. It was passed in 2017, and you saw an American economic boom unlike we've seen in a generation in this country. That is a record that I'm proud to run on, and we're going to get back to that common sense wisdom so that you can afford to live the American dream again.
Just an outstanding answer. Number one, notice he's dealing with facts. Number two, notice that he's pinning Kamala Harris's shoulders to the mat on the issue of economic performance. You think you've got a plan to make the country better, bring down prices? Where is it? You're there now. You're the vice president. We've seen your record. Again, the winner last night was J.D. Vance. The loser was not Governor Walz. The loser was Kamala Harris. She took some hits. They are trying desperately to portray Kamala Harris as the candidate of change. J.D. Vance just reminded people over and over and over again that when it comes to rising prices, inflation, and the chaos that has enveloped this country because they deliberately opened the southern border, Kamala Harris owns all those issues. She owns these problems. She created. She and Joe Biden created these problems. So the other thing that he did was remind people that Donald Trump has an actual record, and the actual record was pretty darn good. And people want what inflation was when Trump was president, not what it has been the last few years. People want the income growth of the Trump years, not what we've seen more recently. They want a safe, secure, fortified, and protected southern border, not 10 million or more illegals entering this country in less than 4 years' time. So he had a job to do. He did it well. I think he showed, you know, some people say, gee, you know, Donald Trump should debate like this guy. Everybody should, every Republican should debate like J.D. Vance. Everyone should. That is how you connect with the average American. And he was so smart in his first answer to say, you know, I'd like to introduce myself to the American people. It's the first time many Americans have heard from me. And he said that because he realizes that, frankly, a massive number of Americans don't really pay attention to politics like you and me until, you know, October. Until, oh, yeah, there's an election in a month. I better settle in and pay attention to what people are saying. And so this performance, the timing of this performance was just perfect. And instead of, you know, waving his arms and raising his voice, he did neither of those things. But he was absolutely on point when one of the moderators, who said she, before the debate, she said, we're not going to fact check the candidates. The candidates will be fact checking each other. She fact checked J.D. Vance about where Haitian immigrants were coming from, how they got into the country. And she fact checked him inaccurately. And J.D. Vance corrected her. And so she killed his mic, but he still got his point across and he didn't stop talking. So Margaret Brennan really embarrassed herself last night. Number one, by doing something she said she wasn't going to do. And then number two, when it was clear that he was correcting her, she tried to rush them along and say, oh, yeah, all right, thanks very much. We got to go. We have so much more we have to talk about tonight. No, we've got to set the record straight first. So there was, by the way, also an interesting moment in the debate about the subject, again, one of the many subtopics under the heading border security. Have a listen.
Senator, the question was, will you separate parents from their children, even if their kids are U.S. citizens? You have 1 minute.
Margaret, my point is that we already have massive child separations thanks to Kamala Harris's open border. And I didn't accuse Kamala Harris of inviting drug mules. I said that she enabled the Mexican drug cartels to operate freely in this country. And we know that they use children as drug mules. And it is a disgrace. And it has to stop.
And there was some immediate criticism that that's not true. That's not happening. To which I can only say, I think CBS needs to fact check CBS, because there was a story that CBS prepared on how growing numbers of illegal migrants who are children are being used by the cartels as drug mules. Anyway, J.D. Vance continues to expose the dysfunction here.
And the final point, Margaret, is you ask about family separation. Right now in this country, Margaret, we have 320,000 children that the Department of Homeland Security has effectively lost. Some of them have been sex trafficked. Some of them, hopefully, are at homes with their families. Some of them have been used as drug trafficking mules. The real family separation policy in this country is, unfortunately, Kamala Harris's wide open southern border. And I'd ask my fellow Americans to remember, when she came into office, she said she was going to do this. Real leadership would be saying, you know what, I screwed up. We're going to go back to Donald Trump's border policies. I wish that she would do that. It would be good for all of us.
Again, drawing a direct comparison between what Trump's policies were and what the results were, a safe border where very few, relatively few people were getting across illegally, comparing that to the Kamala Harris, Joe Biden policy of lax law enforcement and essentially welcoming and enabling, even encouraging illegal entry into this country. You're going to be hearing from many people in the media go, well, it was just the vice presidential candidates and people don't really pay attention to it. Oh, yes. You know, hope springs eternal that that's the case. I think Americans are going to pay attention because I think J.D. Vance's performance last night was so powerful that it's going to galvanize a lot of people. Well, one thing that he's unquestionably done in 90 minutes time, last night's debate, he made it clear that he is the future of the Republican Party in the United States of America. He firmly established himself as he is the future. Had he faltered, had he been mediocre or just so-so, then he just would have been one of, you know, many a cast of characters, you know, Governor DeSantis and Nikki Haley and, you know, Tim Scott, many other respectable and in some cases admirable political figures. But J.D. Vance made it clear that the future of the Trump movement and the future of the Republican Party will rest on his shoulders. He performed well. And the Democrats know it. Interesting body language. Did you guys see the end of the debate when the wives came on stage and the candidates?
I did. I mean, that was, I've never seen that, John. I shared that earlier, yeah.
Well, what's interesting about that, I've seen it in debates previously. What was interesting is the sound was off, of course. The debate was over. Mm-hmm. So you had to read the body language and the facial expressions. And Mr. and Mrs. Vance were relaxed and smiling and, you know, graciously, you know, chatting away. And Tim Walz looked, well, relieved that it was over, but not really the way you would kick back after you did something really well. You know, there's just an expression and body language you show when you think, ah, it's a good job, well done. And Mrs. Walz, who is herself a Hillary Clinton-esque political activist in her own right, very uncomfortable after that debate last night. So they knew they lost.
Yeah, but she did reach over towards J.D. and shook his hand. And the feeling
Well, the wives shook hands with each other first, and then she reached over. And so, yes.
And it was not fast.
It was a happy ending. It was, no, they
stood there and they talked. I almost thought, John, and I know it just off the cuff, I felt like J.D. looked at Tim and just said, look, if something doesn't work out, you never know the future. Maybe there's something for you with us. I mean, it just looked like two guys like, okay, we did our job. You shared your story. I shared mine. Let's shake hands.
Well, it's like after a football game.
Exactly.
When you see players, you know, chatting after a football game.
You know,
But you can usually tell when players are meeting and chatting after the game, which one of the players was on the winning team and which one of the players their team didn't come through so well.
You said it earlier and Phil said it too. It's a debate worth watching all over again. I have never seen a debate in my life like that one. I was impressed.
Yeah, the one thing I wrote down at the very, very end of the debate was what I learned from the vice presidential debate. And it was something to the effect of Tim Walz and J.D. Vance are a lot more like most Americans than Trump and Kamala Harris are.
That's it.
It's that Midwestern appeal. Well, Minnesota and Ohio.
And most specifically, this relates to the communication skills. I mean, those two communicated themselves, I thought, a whole lot better than we've seen Kamala Harris during this campaign. And to that end, Donald Trump, too.
Yes.
Well, then I thought, too, real quick, Democrats, are they looking at Tim Walz like maybe he wasn't the one we should have had with Kamala Harris?
Yeah.
We should have held him for maybe another choice of what we should have thought.
The most oft-said thing by Democrats who acknowledged that things didn't go well for them last night was, why didn't she pick Governor Shapiro out of Pennsylvania? Someone who's, you know, a genuine political star. They didn't pick him because he's Jewish. They didn't pick him because they thought he'd be a lightning rod for raising that issue and antagonizing the left. That's why Bob Shapiro Josh Shapiro. Josh Shapiro was not selected to be a running mate. And so they're stuck with Governor Walz. It is 20, who self-described himself as a knucklehead last night. I've never heard a politician
That's being honest.
Call himself a knucklehead.
Yeah,
before.
Look, I'm a knucklehead. Watch it again. He says it.
21 minutes after 8, which means Philip J. Vandervoort III's favorite segment of the day, social media from socialists right around the corner on the John Carlson Show. The third's favorite segment of the day, social media from socialists. What's going on, Phil?
And before we get to the socialists, let's take a moment to eulogize, memorialize an iconic trailblazer, John Amos, the actor.
Oh,
the social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. A couple of different posts that I'm seeing. One from an actor named Wendell Pierce. If you don't know Wendell Pierce, he was in The Wire. He was more recently in the Amazon reboot of the Jack Ryan program.
Right.
He plays Jim Greer, the admiral that James Earl Jones played in The Hunt for Red October. Wendell Pierce, black actor himself, posted John Amos and James Earl Jones both passing away here in the last few days. Two titans of theater and film. I witnessed them both display great talent. I am forever in their debt. Rest in peace. Another post about John Amos. And this goes back to Good Times, the 1970s TV show that was almost more famous for Jimmy J.J. Walker being on it.
Dynamite!
Because he was, that was the catchphrase, and he was the hot comic actor at the time.
It was about a family living in the projects
in Chicago.
A sitcom.
Exactly, done by the guy who did All in the Family and the Jeffersons and everything else.
Norman Lear.
Yeah. And this person posted, John Amos was the first black father some of us saw disciplining, loving, and making demands of excellence on his children. We saw him work hard, love his wife, and die trying to provide for them. While he had other roles, that was the John Amos role for me.
And that
sums things up incredibly nicely.
He wouldn't have died on the show if he had come to salary terms. He wanted a big raise. They didn't want to give
it
to him.
That was part of it, yeah. So.
But here's the deal. John Amos was in his late 30s. When he played the dad on that show, his late 30s, he came across as someone in well into his 40s or maybe even into his 50s.
Yeah.
But, back then, a 38-year-old man was a middle-aged man. Mm-hmm. And how different things are today.
And, one other kind of divide about all of this is people reacting on social media who remember him as the dad to Eddie Murphy's character, to Eddie Murphy's love interest in Coming to America from the late 1980s, 1988. And he plays Cleo McDowell, who owns a hamburger fast food restaurant.
A kind of rip-off of
Eddie
McDonald's.
Murphy's character from Africa comes to work, one of the service-level jobs, even though he's a prince in Africa. And then on West Wing, which I never watched, but everyone remembers him as an admiral.
An admiral.
Yeah, an admiral on West Wing, who was a national security advisor, or chairman of the Joint Chiefs, something prominent along those lines. So it's fascinating to see people identify him from those more 80s, 90s roles
versus
the 70s roles. And he was on Roots,
John
the
Amos.
TV adaptation.
Yeah, a lot of great movies and shows.
Gigantic as well.
He was in one of the Die Hard movies, too.
Roots?
Good
he was in there.
Yeah.
Bill Schwartz, our good friend, Northwest News Radio Sports, once had a story on John Amos. He played football for a while before he got into acting
as well.
Don't know if it's the old injury or I don't see much of a future. I'm getting tired. Let's try something on stage.
Anyway, John Amos, not a socialist, but we had to tuck in a little appreciation.
Let's do the socialist on social media. This is Tim Walz, and this is the one I'm putting out from last night's debate.
Okay.
Tim Walz said something that jumped out at me as being, there's no way this can be true. But he was talking about fresh water in Minnesota.
And I worry about this as someone who cares deeply about our national parks and our federal lands. Look, Minnesota, we protect these things. We've got about 20% of the world's fresh water.
20% of the world's fresh water. I know they're the land of 10,000 lakes, but I'm like, that doesn't make up 20% of the world's fresh water. So you search that and you'll find that the Great Lakes, all of the Great Lakes represent 20% of the world's fresh water on this planet. So I guess Tim Walz seems to think that the Great Lakes are now the property of Minnesota.
You can have one of the Great Lakes. You
sorry,
can't
New
have
York.
Them all.
Sorry, Ohio, have... Michigan, Indiana a little bit, and Illinois.
You've got to share.
You're going to have to give all those Great Lakes over to the state of Minnesota per Tim Walz in the debate last night. I'm done.
All right. It is 30 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, the John Carlson Show. Man, oh, man, wait until you hear what Israel has told the Secretary General of the United Nations. Also, man, oh, man, wait until you hear what the lead negotiator for the International Longshoremen's Union, remember, they got a strike going there on the East Coast. Wait until you hear what he has to say about the strike and what he's willing to do to this country to prevail. Really chilling stuff. That and plenty more as the commute continues. Talk Radio 570 KVI. But you're going to hear Geraldo Rivera at the beginning. Then you're going to hear Chris Cuomo with News Nation. Somebody in between whose name I didn't catch. And then you're going to hear CNN anchors John King and Jake Tapper. Before we get to the pièce de résistance, which you absolutely have to hear, an MSNBC meltdown. But let's start with Geraldo. Reacting to last night's debate.
There is no doubt in my mind, however Governor Walz did in terms of sincerity, that Vance won this debate.
Does Governor Walz have a problem with the truth? No.
They were talking at one point. Chris Vance Cuomo wanted to correct something about how Haitians got into this country. And he was right, and the moderators wouldn't let him correct it. It's very interesting.
But at the beginning,
again, now we're going to John King from CNN analyzing the impact of the debate.
Two issues driving the campaign right now are Harris has a big deficit on the economy, Harris has a big deficit on immigration, and Republicans were happy tonight, and Democrats a little bit nervous that on those two issues, Vance carried it.
Then Jake Tapper.
J.D. Vance is much more experienced at this, at public speaking, at defending himself, at pivoting.
Now we get to the fun part. Listen to Nicole Wallace on MSNBC. Absolutely. Not since John Belushi spun off his stool doing Weekend Update with Chevy Chase on Saturday Night Live have you seen anyone have a conniption fit like this in public.
It's the audacity. I agree with you that we're in year nine and no one knows how to cover the audacity. Mm-hmm. The audacity is that someone should have said, stop it. Stop. Stop. Are you effing kidding me? And they should have dropped that F-bomb, right? I mean, they should have just, this is a debate. This may be the only chance people have to see the difference.
That was just classic. That was wonderful. And that was Nicole Wallace. Making about as much sense as she's ever made, but that is how frustrating it was for the progressive left. Because, Walz was their hero. Someone who's every bit as liberal as Jay Inslee and Gavin Newsom, uber-liberal governors from the West Coast. But he happens to be a Midwestern governor. So, he kind of comes in a much more attractive middle American package. And last night just didn't work for him. But again, not just his performance, but J.D. Vance's performance was incredibly impressive. That is why you have so much frustration now among Democrats this morning. All right, real quickly, want to get into a couple of national, international issues. Did you hear what happened earlier today in Israel? Israel has told the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres, a burnt-out socialist politician from Portugal, who's now the Secretary General of the UN, that he is not allowed to set foot in Israel because of the hostility he displayed to Israel, the animus he has displayed after Iran attacked Israel. Again, after Iran attacked, fired 181 ballistic missiles into Israel yesterday, and the response from Gutierrez is he would not criticize Iran by name. All he did was criticize, quote, the broadening of the Middle East conflict, close quote. So notice his language there, as opaque and generic as possible. The foreign secretary of Israel's government, the equivalent of their secretary of state, said, anyone who cannot unequivocally condemn Iran's heinous attack on Israel, as nearly all the countries of the world have done, does not deserve to set foot on Israeli soil. They told the UN chief, stay out of our country. By the way, it has been almost a year since the October 7th slaughter of Jewish civilians by Hamas, a terror entity that ran Gaza. Antonio Guterres, the Secretary General of the United Nations, has still not denounced Hamas's massacre of Israeli citizens. The Foreign Secretary of Israel went on to say, Israel Katz, that Guterres has given, quote, backing to terrorists, rapists, and murderers from Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthi rebels, and now Iran, the mothership of global terror, and that Guterres, quote, will be remembered as a stain on the history of the UN. Oh, I'm so glad they did this. By the way, the good news is that the attack on Israel was a failure. Almost all the missiles, 181 were fired at Israel. Almost all of them were knocked down by a combination of their Iron Dome defense system that shoots down incoming rockets and missiles. And also U.S. Navy destroyers, a pair of them, also knocked down some of the incoming fire. So there were no fatalities and only a few injuries after all those missiles were fired into the country. Wow. This is a country that not only knows how to carry the fight, but they also know how to play defense when they need to. Very quickly, while we have a moment, if you have sensitive ears in the car, probably want to cover them here. This is about a murder that took place in Renton. A repeat criminal murdered a handyman and was released on bail. Had been released on bail 27 hours before the alleged killing for a prior stabbing assault. Here is Fox 13's Jennifer Dowling.
Court documents state that 19-year-old Kishon Jimerson called 911 himself to say he stabbed someone and that he would be waiting outside with a knife.
The 911 caller had called and said that they had stabbed the handyman inside the house.
When officers arrived, they reported that they found Kishon Jimerson in front and saw blood but no knife. Court papers say Jimerson had blood on his jeans, his shoes, and on his feet. Court documents state once inside, officers discovered a male subject in the living room of the apartment who was suffering from knife wounds. Investigators say Gray had been stabbed in the back and on his side.
Patrol responded to that call They located the suspect outside, who was cooperative and detained.
When law enforcement was asked if they objected to his release, they marked yes, stating Jimerson stabbed a 65-year-old man with a large knife during an argument. At his court appearance, prosecutors asked for $2 million bail. Despite finding probable cause for second-degree murder, Judge Michelle Gelson set bail at only $50,000. Jimerson posted bail and was released.
And 24 hours later, murdered someone, again, with a knife. Allegedly, legally, covering ourselves, but again, he confessed. Just unbelievable. Thank you, Judge Michelle Gelson. Thank you, Judge Michelle Gelson. I'll give you her name one more time. Thank you, Judge Michelle Gelson. Your tenure as a judge now has a body count, if it didn't already. It is 8:47. When we come back, you've got to hear the union negotiator for the longshoremen back east. You think you're listening to a Martin Scorsese movie, for crying out loud. You're not going to believe it. Okay, you've got East Coast docks going silent here as the longshoremen strike from Maine all the way down to the Gulf Coast is underway. Their chief negotiator, Harold Daggett, says he'll cripple the economy if he needs to get what he wants. This guy is right out of a Martin Scorsese movie. Bald-headed, goatee, tough-looking, tough-sounding. Here is what he had to say.
These people today don't know what a strike is.
Right.
When my men hit the streets from Maine to Texas, every single port a lockdown. You know what's going to happen? I'll tell you. First week, be all over the news every night, boom, boom. Second week, guys who sell cars can't sell cars because the cars ain't coming in off the ships. They get laid off. Third week, malls start closing down. They can't get the goods from China. They can't sell clothes. They can't do this. Everything in the United States comes on a ship. They go out of business. Construction workers get laid off because the materials aren't coming in. The steel's not coming in. The lumber's not coming in. They lose their job. Everybody's hating the longshoremen now because now they realize how important our jobs are. Now I have the president screaming at me, I'm putting a Taft Hartley on you. Go ahead. Taft Hartley means I have to go back to work for 90 days. That's a cooling off period. Do you think when I go back for 90 days, those men are going to go to work on that pier? It's going to cost the money, the company's money, to pay their salaries. Well, they went from 30 moves an hour maybe to 8. They're going to be like this. Who's going to win here in the long run? You're better off sitting down, and let's get a contract, and let's move on with this world. And in today's world, I'll cripple you. I will cripple you, and you have no idea what that means. Nobody does.
Where did unions get such a bad rap? Where did they get such a bad reputation? You know what he sounds like? He sounds like the guy who was running the Air Traffic Controllers Union. His name is Robert Poli, back in 1981, threatening to ground the entire airline, every airline in America, by not having the air traffic controllers report to work. And we all know how Ronald Reagan dealt with that threat. No more Patco union. Anyway, so that's what's happening right now on the East Coast. That's their negotiator, air quote. That's their negotiator. No telling whether he brings brass knuckles to the table or not. It's all the time we have for now. Get out there and enjoy this day. We'll talk again tomorrow.